Frank Rizzo died when I was 11 years old. His viewing was at a funeral home around the corner from my house in Germantown. And I can remember hundreds of people lined up to pay respects.
This morning, many of the people in the public are waiting to go in. They've been standing here, many of them, since 8 o'clock this morning. But there's
the former Philly mayor and police commissioner was known for brutal crackdowns, particularly in minority communities. But he was still a beloved figure to many years after he left office. I didn't know much about Rizzo at the time, but in the years that followed, I would learn that most people in my hometown had one of two opinions of Rizzo: glowing or scathing. And now that same divide exists over whether his statue should have been removed from Center City.
We know about, you know, him beating people brutally. That statue, especially in that place, but anywhere in the city, really just didn't make sense.
I don't see how Frank Rizzo is the reason there's riots all over the country, but, you know, some people are using that as an excuse to take it down.
Why did the Rizzo statue become the emblem of police brutality for a new generation of protesters in Philly? Why did it take so long to take down the statue? And why was this literally the tipping point? I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. This is The Why.
My name is David Gambacorta, and I'm a writer-at-large at the Philadelphia Inquirer.
David looked into Rizzo's history just after the monument came down. Heads up, there's some offensive language used in this episode. David, you know, Frank Rizzo died almost 30 years ago, but, you know, when you talk to people about his influence on the city, whether they supported him or not, you kind of think he's still alive, like the outsized influence that he still has here. Why do you think he feels kind of so present in Philadelphia?
There are probably a couple of different reasons why Frank Rizzo sort of cast this shadow that in a lot of ways I think we're still under. Some of it is just the nature of his story. You know, his family were Italian immigrants. He was a high school dropout. And for him to rise from, you know, a person of that station in life and to become the police commissioner of one of the largest police departments in America and then mayor, you know, it has that sort of rags to riches vibe to it that connects with people. And I think certainly for people in Rizzo's neighborhood in South Philadelphia, you know, I think there was something about that that made them want to root for him. And, you know, he kind of had this swashbuckling way about him when he was a young police officer. His nickname was the Cisco Kid.
Here's O. Henry's famous Robin Hood of the Old West, the Cisco Kid.
And that came for his willingness to dive into fights. And there's something about that, I think, that plays in people's imaginations. But then his time as commissioner and mayor, I think it veers in a different direction. And that's probably the part that we're still wrestling with, because he wielded tremendous power. And I think the way he used that is what we're still trying to make sense of. And we're still obviously arguing about.
Well, I want to ask some specifics about sort of his career and his record. Deputy commissioner in 1963, commissioner in 1967. He developed this police force that was really known for policing the neighborhood, not afraid to send police out and use force. What are some kind of points of his record where that happened? Like, what specifically can we kind of attribute to him?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, some of it stems from a motto that he had. It was a quote that I think he was fond of sharing, that the way to treat criminals is spacco il capo, which is Italian for break their heads.
I come from an arena where I learned to take my lumps and give some.
There were instances, especially in the 1960s, at the height of the civil rights movement, that still stand out today. There was one that Barbara Laker and I, a colleague at the Inquirer, we'd recently just sort of reviewed again. It happened in 1965 at Girard College.
Right. This involves a man named Kenny Salam, right?
Right.
My name is Kenneth Salam, and in the 1960s, I was known as Freedom Smitty.
You had folks there that were protesting the college, which, for people that don't know, is a boarding school that at that time was only admitting poor white children, white boys, typically that were orphaned. You had people outside there that were calling for equality, marching for equality, and in what would sort of be a scene that would be repeated numerous times in the years ahead, Rizzo is on the scene.
Rizzo was in charge, you know, of all uniform officers' movements at that time.
And what Kenny had relayed to us was, you know, Rizzo was telling cops to get on their motorcycles and run protesters over.
I wasn't injured. I was there, but I wasn't injured, thank God. Several women, I mean, young women, one young lady ran over, you know, hit her, knocked her, and beat her.
You know, or the officers were directed to use their nightsticks, their fists, whatever they can get their hands on to beat the people that were there. And, you know, it would happen again in 1967, you know, where there was a protest at the post office at 30th and Market, where there was a demonstration calling for equal hiring practices. And there again, we had heard from Kenny, who was at that incident too, and found that officers were being violent, being abusive, using racist language.
And one of them said, "You niggas, y'all want y'all freedom? Come through this."
And one detail that he had mentioned that really stuck out was that
they had these long nightsticks. And these sticks back then, you know, they were wood, but inside the wood there was a thin bar of steel or metal. And some of those sticks, they've used them so much that some of the wood had worn off. Some of the metal was exposed.
And Kenny remembered, you know, seeing sparks in the ground and thinking,
I said, "Norman, these guys are trying to kill us."
You know, that sort of behavior, those sorts of tactics, that creates a scar, particularly in the African-American community. And that's still there today.
And some of this did come under scrutiny by the federal government. They sued the entire Philadelphia Police Department in the late 70s, right?
Yeah. And this was, I think, probably has been lost a little bit to the sands of time, but it is startling when you just review the record. This was 1979, and it was the first time that the Department of Justice had sued an entire police department. And it was for a litany of practices, including shooting unarmed civilians and basically having a system in internal affairs that would set up in such a way that any civilian complaints that were filed against police, you know, really wouldn't go anywhere. And some of that included intimidating witnesses and getting them to recant their statement. A lot of it had centered on how abusive officers could be to civilians, even people who were handcuffed. And so that, I think, was probably one of the most prominent instances of an outside agency stepping in and saying there's something seriously wrong with how this police department is operating.
So what did people in Philadelphia think of Frank Rizzo when he was mayor?
There's actually a really terrific documentary that came out in 1978 while he was still in office called Amateur Night at City Hall, the story of Frank L. Rizzo. And it really showed that even then, you know, there were basically only two camps, two schools of thought on Frank Rizzo. And that was either people thought he was the best mayor the city ever had.
I think for an uneducated man, he's really achieved quite a lot.
I think he's doing a very nice job.
Why do I like him? He's just an ordinary man like anybody else.
What has he done for me? Well, I'm Italian. I should like him.
I think he's the greatest thing that ever happened to Philadelphia.
Mayor Frank Rizzo, he's one of the greatest mayors we'll ever have. Not only that, he's doing a very, very good job. South Philadelphia's wholeheartedly in support of Frank Rizzo.
Or that they thought he was a tyrant.
I think there's a major question about whether a strong cop is the right way to conduct municipal government.
I think Frank Rizzo is a megalomaniacal, narcissistic cretin. I think he's a petty tyrant. I think he's an ignorant, brutal man who has clubbed his way to the top.
I think Frank Rizzo is the worst mayor the city's ever had, or at least as long as I can remember. And I can't wait till we get him out of there.
And it's startling, I think, in a way, to see it on film, because a lot of the discussions that we have about Rizzo today, I think, often we'll kind of trip on a point, which is, well, if you weren't alive then, or if you weren't in the city then, how could you really know? And then you see this film, which shows people right in the middle of that period of time, you know, really having such strongly divided opinions on him.
After his time as mayor, he did run several more times until he died in 1991. And that divide over his legacy kind of remained. And then in 1999, there's this effort to erect a statue of him. Can you just describe how that unfolded?
Yeah, in the aftermath of Rizzo's death, there was an effort by supporters and friends and folks who used to work for him, you know, to sort of memorialize his image. And what they ended up raising money for became that statue, that bronze 10-foot statue that was planted in front of the Municipal Services Building. You know, I think probably at that point in time, we're talking the late 1990s, the topic of police reform, police accountability and abuse was not really a front burner issue that it is now. So, you know, the statue was planted there. I don't recall there being the outcry, certainly, that we're seeing today. But it didn't take long for that to become a symbol of an era in the city's history that, you know, is still very painful and, you know, one that we're still kind of grappling with.
We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. As early as 2016, there were calls to get rid of the Rizzo statue. Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney said he thought it should be removed, but nothing happened during his first term in office. Then the George Floyd protests began. The Inquirer's David Gambacorta picks up the story from here.
That would have been, I guess, May 29th.
No peace! No justice! No peace! No justice! No peace!
And what happened by sort of late afternoon was you had different groups of protesters that had been marching from the Art Museum area down, all converging on John F. Kennedy Boulevard. It's right in front of City Hall and the Municipal Services Building. And that crowd kind of takes on different forms. You know, some people are there just chanting and calling for justice for Floyd. But then you had other elements there that were, I think, starting to turn a little violent and clashing with police. And of course, you know, the Rizzo statue is right there, sticking out like a sore thumb. So some people spray painted it, some tied ropes around it. I think there were a few that even tried to set it on fire. And there was an effort to topple it. They weren't able to actually get it down, but I think probably at that point for city officials, it became clear that, you know, this was no longer an issue that they could punt on, that something would have to be done about the statue. But, you know, miraculously, under the cover of night, it looked like just a small handful of workers were out there, and they pulled it out of the ground and hauled it away, which, you know, I think makes people again sort of rightfully wonder, well, if it wasn't that involved, then why couldn't it just have been done, you know, 4 years ago?
We did hear a little bit of explanation given by the city at a budget hearing last week about, you know, why they were able to sort of do this now and how they went about it. Can you describe that a little bit?
Right. I think what we ended up seeing was the city saying that there was essentially a loophole in a maintenance agreement that had been entered into by the Rendell administration when the statue first went up.
There was a donation and maintenance agreement that was entered into by the Rendell administration that required the city to give notice to the monument committee, which included a number of government officials as well as members of Mr. Rizzo's family.
But in this instance, you know, now the city could say there's a public safety issue at play.
There was also an exception for if the statue posed a risk to public safety.
You know, because if that statue is damaged enough that it topples over, it's 2,000 pounds. So it could very easily, you know, maim or kill somebody if it falls on a crowd of people.
And if it did, then we were no longer required to give notice or allow the family or the committee to come and retrieve the statue. And it also allowed us to damage the statue, that is, take it out in a way that doesn't preserve it completely.
So that was the language that was presented, you know, like this is how we were able to finally get it done. But it's hard not to look at it and just say, you know, it was just a matter of political will. Things had grown so out of control at that first protest. You know, this was maybe a potential de-escalation tactic.
And so in that way, do you think that these protests provide the city with a reason, a bit of cover to sort of navigate this debate over the legacy of Frank Rizzo?
I think it's pretty fair to evaluate it that way, because I think even for his supporters and family members, and obviously they feel very differently about his legacy and the statue, to say it's a public safety issue, you know, there's sort of less of a counter argument to mount there. You know, if you could say, look, we're seriously concerned this thing is going to fall down and injure somebody.
Do you know what the Rizzo family's reaction has been to the statue coming down?
Yeah, I think Rizzo's grandson, Joe Mastronardo, has been pretty vocal in recent years about defending his grandfather's legacy. I had spoken with him, I think it was on the first day of protests, so it would have been that Saturday, and he had said he wasn't surprised that people, you know, kind of converged on the statue and tried to pull it down, that he's come to expect that any time there's a demonstration in the city over, you know, issues like police accountability, that's where they're going to head. You know, but I think he's also still insistent that people have the wrong idea about his grandfather, and that many of his critics today and some of the loudest voices calling for that statue to be removed either weren't alive when Rizzo was police commissioner or mayor, or they weren't in the city at that time. And so therefore, you know, how can they really know who this guy was and what he meant?
We started off talking about sort of the long shadow that Frank Rizzo has cast in the city. Now that this statue is down, do you think that we might see his legacy sort of similarly fade away?
It's certainly possible. You know, Philadelphia is interesting in the way because it's a big city, but it's also very much a small town. And I say that as a native Philadelphian. You know, we don't have very many real celebrities. It's, you know, athletes and politicians and meteorologists, basically. So I think, you know, in some ways, maybe that is part of why Rizzo was such a big deal for that era. You know, who would have been bigger than him? This outsized character, you know, who talked the way he did and carried himself the way he did. But now that we are hopefully, seemingly entering into a period of time where there's broad agreement that a lot of the practices that he encouraged when he was in charge of the police department and seemingly stayed in place for a very long time, that we need to reform them and we need to move beyond them. You know, maybe that does kind of push him back a little bit. I think for the police department, you know, there is a big piece that they have to kind of come to terms with, particularly as it relates to that Justice Department lawsuit. You know, the core concept in there, I think, was how is this department held accountable? You know, and who ensures that you do have transparency, that if there are complaints about problem cops, that, you know, they get a fair hearing and that they're addressed in some way. I mean, that's what they were getting at then. And I think, you know, the reaction of Rizzo when he was mayor and other officials at the time was to kind of laugh it off. And that has continued. You know, I mean, I've been covering the police department for the better part of 15 years and, you know, have seen time and again where there's evidence of officers who, you know, have a history of misconduct or wrongdoing, and yet little seems to happen to them.
And beyond removing the Rizzo statue, do you think that's going to change? I mean, we've seen a lot of movement in a very short time here of talk about police reforms, but do you see action coming down the pike?
I think that maybe this moment is different, because you're right. I mean, certainly the language here is such that we've heard before, you know, reform, accountability, and integrity, and all of that. I don't feel like I've seen such broad buy-in like we're seeing right now, you know, across political spectrums, acknowledging that, yes, there are some inherent problems and practices, and that those practices disproportionately hurt Black communities. So that's a first step. But we'll see, you know, where are we at in 6 months? Where are we at in a year or two? If the ball hasn't really been moved that far down the field, then, you know, I guess we'll probably continue to talk about Frank Rizzo.
David, thank you so much for talking to me.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
David Gambacorta is a writer-at-large for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He co-wrote the story on Frank Rizzo with Inquirer reporter Barbara Laker. The archival audio you heard is from the Robert Muggy documentary Amateur Night at City Hall, The Frank L. Rizzo Story, courtesy of Global Image Works. The Y is produced by Annette John Hall, Alex Stern, and Kelsey Hansen, with help from Sabrina Boyd Circa and editorial direction from Katie Colinari. We had editing help on this episode from Eugene San. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. Stay safe, and we'll see you tomorrow.